At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Listener. Summer nights are heating up, and if your mattress is trapping heat, it might be time for a change. Avocado Green Mattresses use breathable, organic materials that sleep cooler naturally. All Avocado mattresses are crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. Breathable materials that sleep cooler and are free from harmful chemicals, destined to provide exceptional comfort and support. With options ranging from gentle firm to plush, meeting diverse sleep needs and preferences. Take our mattress quiz to see which mattress and comfort option is right for you. And it promotes better sleep through breathable, naturally temperature regulating materials, which can improve overall well-being. No harmful chemicals, just healthy materials for a cleaner, safer sleep. Avocado is committed to sustainability. Every avocado mattress is made from eco-friendly materials and built to last. High quality means fewer replacements, better for the planet and your wallet. And avocado mattresses are ethical and transparent. From sourcing to production, Avocado holds itself to the highest sustainability and safety standards. Certified organic and always honest. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and check out their mattress and bedding sale. Avocado. Dream of better.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
Fall morning of October 27, 1983, Alaska State Troopers pulled up to Robert Hansen's bakery, but they weren't there for donuts, as they had been so many mornings before. When Robert arrived, they politely requested that he accompany them down to the station, and he agreed. Part of the FBI's recommendations in helping to elicit a confession from Robert was to adorn the police interrogation room, wall to wall, with maps, as well as photos of the crime scenes, victims, and missing women. Robert was left in the room alone for a time, confronted with the visual evidence against him. During his five-hour interview, Robert was open with police about how his unhappy childhood and strict father had caused some anger management issues. He answered questions about his criminal record and admitted to using the services of exotic dancers and sex workers in the early 1970s. He also used the opportunity to tell investigators that he didn't appreciate being charged more by a sex worker than originally agreed, but he denied harming any of the women with whom he ever came into contact. With the interview underway, troopers simultaneously descended upon Robert's home, bakery, and the airport to execute the various search warrants, including searches of the Super Cub and Robert's vehicles. Nothing of significance was found at the bakery, so officers converged at the Hansen home to assist in the videotaped search. Behind the headboard of Robert's bed, officers located an aerial map depicting Anchorage, the Kinnick River Valley, and surrounding districts. On the map were 24 crosses marked as an X, all within a 100-mile radius of the city. A search of a concealed space in the attic revealed 30 firearms hidden under ceiling insulation, including a .22-caliber Remington 552 rifle, a Thompson Contender 7mm single-shot pistol, a Winchester 12-gauge shotgun, and a .223 Ruger Mini 14 rifle. Two of these guns were similar to the ones used to kill Sherry Morrow and Paula Goulding, and threatened Cindy Paulson. Handguns seized from the garage included a Browning .22 semi-automatic, a Colt Match .22, and a Colt Python 357 caliber revolver. Also uncovered in the search behind wood paneling in the den were Sherry Morrow's necklace and jewelry belonging to other victims and missing women. A gold custom-made fish necklace found among the mementos in Robert's attic was identified as belonging to Andrea Altieri. It was one of her most valued possessions, and there was no way Andrea would have parted with it willingly. It was also discovered that the hunting trophies Robert had earlier reported as stolen were actually in his backyard. Investigators also recovered numerous stolen items, including a chainsaw, a 10-horsepower outboard motor, portable radio, telescope, vinyl airplane seat, green generator, and a push lawn mower. From the storage compartment behind the pilot seat of the Super Cub, police found a Colt semi-auto 22 caliber pistol. The news was sent through to the interrogation room where Robert was still being questioned. He claimed that his wife had later found his stolen hunting trophies in the backyard, that he had just forgotten to tell the insurance company, but as far as anything else was concerned, he wouldn't budge. Robert asked to consult with his attorney, and the interview ended. Back at the Hansen residence, a neighbor approached police out front of the property to see what was going on. When she was informed that Robert's home was being searched in connection with the disappearance and attacks on women in the Anchorage area, the neighbor dropped a bombshell. She told police that Robert had asked her husband to provide a false alibi for the night Cindy Paulson was abducted. Her husband had assumed that Robert was being pursued over a minor matter, and in an effort to protect his friend, agreed to cover for him. Robert's friend contacted police to retract his statement, and both friends were brought in for questioning. Both men admitted that they hadn't been with Robert on the night Cindy was abducted. While a confession from Robert hadn't yet been forthcoming, police arrested him in early November for the kidnap and rape of 17-year-old Cindy Paulson. In addition to misconduct in possession of a handgun, theft in the second degree, and theft by deception and insurance fraud, Robert pled not guilty to all charges and was taken to custody, with bail set at $500,000. The evidence gathered during the search of Robert's residence, meanwhile, implicated him in the murder of 11 women and was strong enough to convict him on 4 counts. But investigators hadn't bided their time, as the ballistic test results on Robert's Ruger Mini 14 rifle were yet to come back from the FBI crime lab in Washington, D.C., where it had been sent in early November. State Trooper Sergeant Flothy had wanted the rifle hand-delivered, but instead it was sent by mail. When Sergeant Flothy received a call from the FBI wondering where the rifle was because it hadn't arrived, he went into a panic. The piece of physical evidence that was crucial to convicting Robert Hansen had gone missing. But thankfully, the rifle showed up in a loading dock in Chicago, of all places. When the test results came back in late November, the shell casings found at the grave sites were all found to have been fired from Robert's rifle. The firing pin and the extractor markings were identical. Being able to conclusively link the murder weapon for Sherry Morrow and Paula Goulding to Robert Hansen was the breakthrough law enforcement had been hoping for. But they needed more. Up until now, the aerial map recovered from behind Robert's bedhead hadn't been given much consideration based on the reasonable assumption that Robert had simply documented the locations of his kills to record his hunting prowess. But one day, in December, while working through the reams of material on the case, Sergeant Flothy came to a horrifying realization. The 24 crosses on the map mark locations along the Kinnick River, Kenai Peninsula, Seward Bay, and Resurrection Bay. 4 of the crosses corresponded to the exact locations where the bodies of Eklutna Annie, Joanna Messina, Sherry Morrow, and Paula Goulding had been recovered. The crosses didn't record where Robert had killed animals. It was where he'd killed women. Meanwhile, Cindy Paulson had returned to sex work in Anchorage at the Gentleman's Retreat Massage Parlor. In January 1984, she was served with a subpoena regarding Robert's trial. But by February, she had disappeared. The APD feared she'd fled back to Seattle, no doubt terrified of the repercussions from the man who she was certain was out to kill her, or the police who she felt just wanted to discredit and humiliate her. Thankfully, Cindy was still in Anchorage and living in the Government Hill area. She was working for a new pimp. When she suddenly reappeared and contacted police, fearing for her safety, law enforcement swooped in and arranged for her to be taken to a safe house. Police had contacted Sandra Patterson, who had been abducted and raped by Robert Hansen back in 1971. Sandra was no longer a sex worker. Having graduated college and got married, she had every reason to want to stay as far away from her past as possible, but she promised to testify. Then, in mid-February 1983, police got another break. Robert Hansen's defense attorney contacted police, advising that his client wanted to talk to them to clear the decks. Robert's attorney arranged a meeting with the Anchorage District Attorney Office, during which Robert was offered a deal. In exchange for a full confession, Robert would be charged with only four of the murder cases that investigators could prove. He would be able to serve his time in a federal facility instead of a maximum security prison. In his confession on February 22nd, which lasted 12 hours over 2 days, Robert opened up by telling Assistant District Attorney Frank Rothschild about how he first met Cindy Paulson.
Well, why don't we start then with what will be freshest in mind, which is the cases that are pending now and from what happened in June of last year. Can you tell us how that all came about?
You want me, sir, to start when I first met the Cindy Paulson first time, or?
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay. I'm sorry, I don't remember the right dates and so forth. It's going to have to be a little bit vague on that, I'm sorry.
Would it have been during the time when your wife and children were out of?
Yes. My wife and family were down in Arkansas visiting her folks and so forth. And I met her the first time uptown. The first time I seen Cindy Paulson was about a block west of, I think it's a 76 station on the corner there of Gamble. She was standing there, and I was driving down the street, and she waved a little bit and so forth, and I pulled up there and talked with her, and it was just usual little chit-chat, you know, asking, you know, the guy in the car and asked how I was doing and so forth, and was I looking for a good time and so forth. I chatted there with her a little bit, and made agreements with her that I was going to see her sometime. I didn't, you know, it was, I couldn't see her that night because it was during the week. And I remember my bakery and I'm starting there at 1 o'clock in the morning. And she gave me a phone number there for her at one of the motels. Big Timber Mush, and I'm sorry, I can't remember which one. And I called back to her the next day or some a day or two afterwards, and she I can't remember if she wasn't there or she couldn't meet me. Then on the
Robert again recounted what happened after he got Cindy into his car on June 13th.
We drove to my home out in Muldoon. And there we had, went down into my basement, down into my den. All I do is I turn on the television set and so forth. We sat there on the couch for a little while. We had, sat there, I fumbled for a little bit, we sat there and discussed that, didn't discuss much really, just talked a little bit and chit-chat, and then, of course, she was saying that, no, she had to get back, and then she wanted to go someplace and go to bed and so forth. I told her no, I would like to stay down here in the basement. I told her that I would would like to do it a little bit different. I would like to have sex with there on a large bear rug that I have there. Or not a large, but just a normal black bear rug I had there on the floor and so forth. And then I would like to, if all possible, talk her into, if I could, while I was having sex with her, if I could put a pair of handcuffs on her. And she said no. And she didn't care to have that. And she says she didn't want any thing like that to go on. Well, at that time, I told her that I was going to put the handcuffs on her. I was going to have sex with her on the bear rug. She said she didn't object to where we had sex and so forth, but not the handcuffs. And at that time, I guess I showed her a firearm and told her that I wanted her to put the handcuffs on, and that I told her that she had to put them on. But that's the first time I know she stated that I forced her in up at the car and so forth. That's not true. The first time there was any force use and so forth was in my home. And it is true there, I had sex with her there on the bear rug and so forth in my home.
When investigators confronted Robert Hansen with the aerial map adorned with crosses, they questioned him about the precise number of victims. Assistant DA Frank Rothschild saw for the first time how the friendly local businessman everyone knew could transform into someone who terrorized women. Robert's neck turned red, and his demeanor changed. He was livid. He asked for a break to consult with his lawyers, but could be heard screaming at them from behind the closed door. Robert eventually agreed to plead guilty and confess to the murders of Sherry Morrow, Joanna Messina, Eklutna Annie, and Paula Goulding, on the condition that his family be left alone, that there be no publicity about his arrest, that upon conviction he be imprisoned outside Alaska. He claimed that the women he'd killed were linked to criminal gangs, and if he remained in the state, he'd be murdered in prison. As part of his plea deal, Robert also agreed to reveal to the state police where more of his victims' bodies were buried. Robert went on to matter-of-factly confess to raping more than 30 women during his time in Anchorage, but claimed he'd released the ones who had submitted to his demands and assured him they wouldn't report him to the police. He told police that he befriended women by telling them he was from out of town, then offered to pay to conduct photo shoots. He arranged to meet up with them at fast food restaurants or cafes, where they'd accompany him to his car to another location. What the women didn't know was that one half of a handcuff was already fastened to the passenger seat. Once his unsuspecting prey was in the car, Robert would reach over and grab his gun while fastening the other cuff to his victim. He would then drive the women to his home or a motel where he would rape and torture them. Following the horrific sexual assault, Robert would tell his victims he was taking them to his cabin, which in reality was a shack in the Kinnick River area of the Matanuska Valley, accessible only by boat or bush plane. Robert had barrels scattered in various locations throughout the mountains filled with supplies such as rope, ammunition, guns, duct tape, and shovels. He blindfolded his victims and drove or flew them out to the wilderness on the outskirts of town. If they resisted, he forced them to strip at gunpoint, let them go, and then hunted them down with a firearm, like wild animals. The victims were usually given a head start, and in a terrifying psychological twist, Robert often allowed a victim to think she had escaped, only for him to pursue her again, and claim that redressing his victims after he'd murdered them satisfied his need for control. Investigators soon discovered why it had been so difficult to monitor Robert's flight activity following the discovery of Sherry Morrow's body in 1982. Robert had been flying without a pilot's license, and in order to avoid detection, he painted the ID number of his plane in small letters, so they were impossible to detect from a distance. He also frequently provided a different ID number to the control tower at Merrill Airfield when taking off and landing. It was as if the flights never occurred. Robert admitted to abducting and murdering Clutina Annie in November 1979, but denied raping her. He believed she came to Anchorage from the Kodiak area and that she worked at the Good Times Bar. When Robert abducted Annie, he drove her out of town to the Glen Highway, but when she tried to escape, he threatened her with a gun. Robert's truck then became bogged, so Annie used the opportunity to run. Robert chased her down Clutina Road and stabbed her to death in the back with a hunting knife she had in her purse. Robert then told police that in May 1980, he bought Joanna Messina dinner, and the pair then drove up to the Seward Highway to the Snow River. But when Joanna propositioned Robert and asked him for money, things turned bad quickly. Robert struck Joanna over the head and then shot her and her dog with a .22 pistol. Robert dragged Joanna's body across the gravel, stuffed her into a sleeping bag, and threw the gun into the Snow River. He claimed he was violently sick after the killing. Robert revealed that after raping and torturing Paula Goulding in April 1983 in his cabin outside Anchorage, he opened the front door and let her run away. After a few moments, he took off after her with his rifle. He became animated when he talked about how Paula had cut her feet running across some sharp rocks. She tried to ride under some nearby bush, but when Robert saw her and called out, she jumped up and ran over open ground, unknowingly giving her attacker a clear shot. Of Paula's murder, Robert said, "It was like going after a trophy doll sheep or a grizzly bear." Robert explained that he was able to abduct, rape, and murder women and remain undetected by sending his family away on extended summer vacations to either his wife's family in Arkansas or to Europe, which he came to call his summer plan.
Listener, did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I recently took the True Age test from True Diagnostic and discovered my biological age, and the results completely changed the way I think about my health. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious disease. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is, nearly 90% of the biological aging is in your hands. Yes, it's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means you have a lot of control over it. I was surprised by my results, and I realized that I have some work to do. And I bet if you took the test, there might be a few changes that you need to make, listener. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed me how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. It was eye-opening. My true age was a few years higher than my current age. It was a wake-up call that I needed to make some serious changes. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, no doctor visit or big needles, just a quick, painless finger prick. You send off that tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. It's fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code OBSCURA to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code OBSCURA at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Listener, did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code OBSCURA. Forget one-size-fit-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. Whether that's mind magic gummies for deep work and creativity, PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listener, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Obscura. So head to Mood.com, find your functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Obscura when you check out to save 20% off on your first order.
4 weeks before his wife and children left their European summer vacation in 1983, Robert placed an ad in the singles column of the Anchorage Daily News, which read, "Adventurous male, 42, 5'11", 165 pounds, looking for a lady proud to be a woman, to share sincere, honest attachment, must like to dance and enjoy social life, willing to put on jeans. Join me in finding what's around the next bend, over the next hill. Enjoy flying own plane, beachcombing, fishing, camping. Life is much fuller if shared. Send recent photo." Robert soon received a response on June 8th, 5 days before he abducted Cindy Paulson. The woman who responded to the ad visited his house. Robert showed her his hunting trophies in the den and told her he wanted to have sex with her on the bare rug. The woman turned him down, given it was a first date. In a close call for Robert, the woman turned out to work for the Alaska State Troopers. During his confession, Robert was asked about taking a woman to McHugh Creek in 1971. Listener, as you'll recall from part one, this was the location where Beth Van Zandt's body was discovered on Christmas Day of that year. As written about by author Leland Hale in an article for pop culture website The Lineup. Now, just over 12 years later, Robert blurted out Beth's name during his confession, but quickly denied any responsibility or knowledge of the case. Beyond being charged for abducting Sandra Patterson a few days before Beth's disappearance, but an X mark found on the aerial map recovered from his house corresponded with the location where Beth's body was found, contradicting Robert's denial. Robert demonstrated a detailed knowledge of the Seward area where Megan Emmerich was last seen in July 1973, and Mary Thill was last seen in July 1975. Robert admitted to meeting Megan on the Seward docks the weekend she disappeared, stating he tried to lure her onto his boat, but he denied abducting and murdering either Megan or Mary. Robert went on to say that following the police questioning over his attack on Christy Hayes in 1979, he never used his camper again, instead relying on his car and plane to transport victims. He also learned that people were less likely to notice or report exotic dancers and sex workers as missing, and that they were harder to track down due to the transient nature of their employment. At the time of Megan Emmerich's disappearance, she was described as having long brown hair and hazel eyes. She was reported to be 5 foot 4 inches tall and weighed 120 pounds. She was last seen wearing blue jeans, a white long-sleeve checkered suit, a brown short-sleeve sweatshirt, and suede ski boots. At the time of Mary Thill's disappearance, she was described as having auburn or red hair and blue eyes. She was reported to be 5 foot 5 inches tall and weighed 130 pounds. She was last seen wearing an army jacket, a gray pullover sweater, blue jeans, leather hiking boots, and was carrying a small backpack. She regularly wore glasses with round pink frames and thick lenses. Robert Hansen confessed to abducting, raping, and murdering Roxanne Easland, a sex worker who disappeared from Anchorage in late June 1980 and was never seen again. At the time of her disappearance, Roxanne was described as having brown hair and brown eyes. She was reported to be 5 foot 3 inches tall and weighed 90 to 105 pounds. Was last seen wearing a short brown leather coat with a fur collar, pants or blue jeans, and black high-heeled boots. Roxanne may have been carrying a purse and was sometimes known to wear wire-framed glasses. She also had a birthmark on top of her shoulder and a birthmark on the top of her right thigh. Robert also confessed to abducting, raping, and murdering Andrea Altieri, a sex worker who disappeared from Anchorage in early December 1981. Like Roxanne, Andrea was never seen again. After he picked Andrea up, Robert had fondled her breasts in the car and ordered her to perform oral sex. When the pair got out of the car near the Kinnick River Bridge, Robert told her that he had raped a woman at the same spot a week prior. Andrea attempted to grab Robert's pistol and poked her fingers in his eyes, but he shot her. Robert partially confirmed during his confession that Andrea's body was weighted down with a gravel-filled airplane bag and had been thrown into the river from an overhead railroad bridge. At the time of her disappearance, Andrea was described as having brown hair and brown eyes. She was reported to be 5'5" tall and weighed 120 pounds. Was last seen wearing black leather jacket, red sweater, blue jeans, brown cowboy boots, a gold-colored ring set with a pearl, a gold-colored ring set with two pearls, an antique wedding band with a rosette top, and the custom-made fish necklace discussed earlier that was found in Robert's attic. The necklace was a gold chain with a small sterling silver pendant in the shape of a salmon, with a diamond setting for the eye. Andrea may have been carrying a black zippered purse and a small floral print makeup bag. Despite Andrea's mother providing Andrea's dental records to assist with any identification, Andrea is still listed as a missing person. Robert admitted to blindfolding and handcuffing Sherry Morrow the moment she got in his car. He drove off, and during the trip, he forced her to kneel on the floor of the vehicle. When they arrived at the Kinnick River, Robert took a Ruger Mini 14 out and shot Sherry, who had fought and screamed for her life. During Robert's confession, he admitted that Daylen Frey, who disappeared in April 1983, was not buried, but had been left on the ground near his cabin. Robert admitted to taking Frey up in his plane, and the state medical examiner's office later confirmed that her body was found near a different location in August 1985 by a pilot. Despite the background Robert provided, he never showed any sign of remorse for any of his crimes, saying, "I didn't start to hate all women. As a matter of fact, I would venture to say I started to fall in love with every one of them. Every one of them became so precious to me, because I wanted their friendship. I wanted them to like me so much. On top of the things that have happened, I'm not saying that I hate all women. I don't. Quite to the contrary. I guess in my own mind, what I'm classifying as a good woman, not a sex worker. I do everything in my power, any way, shape, or form, to do anything for her, to see that no harm ever came to her. But I guess sex workers are women I'm putting down as lower than myself. I don't know if I'm making sense or not. I knew what I did was totally, totally wrong. I guess I wanted to control things. It made me feel masculine or powerful, or in control of my life." Including Beth Van Santen, Robert's confession brought the total number of his known murder victims to 17, although there are suspected to be more. Sandra Patterson, who was abducted and raped by Robert in 1971, spoke of a reaction when she was informed that Robert had confessed. She would no longer be required to testify. "I proceeded to fall apart. I started crying. I couldn't stop. I had no control over it. It controlled me. I can see each and every one of those women. How they died. Probably hunted down like dogs. Wounded. And then hunted more." Part 8, The Last Frontier. At the sentencing on February 27th, Assistant DA Frank Rothschild told the court that Robert Hansen wanted to control women on his own terms. In Robert's words, "I was just seeing everybody else get theirs. Then it's my turn to have fun now." In the prosecution's closing statement to the court, Rothschild went on to say, "Your Honor, before you sits a monster, an extreme aberration of a human being. He is a compulsive liar. He gives us what he knows he had to give us, and no more. For those people that he has slain, for those lucky enough to have survived, for all of us. Your Honor, we ask that you rid us of this beastly man forever. This man who loves the outdoors. He's never going to smell the freshness of a mountain meadow. He'll never hear water trickle again down a creek. He'll never thrill in seeing our great wilderness and our wild animals that roam there. He truly hates being locked up. It's better that we lock him up and make him live with this for each breath that he takes for the rest of his life."
Robert Hansen chose not to address the court at his sentencing. Before handing down the sentence, Judge Ralph Moody directed the following comments to the court and to Robert.
"It's hard to believe that humanity produces and sustains people who have the ability and propensity to commit such enormous, such beastly, such indescribable crimes. What we have seen here today, what the defendant has admitted to in many respects, is a condemnation of society as a whole. The court system has failed. Knowing that he was a problem, probation officers, police officers, members of society themselves who could not come forward. I can't think of a bigger indictment of society than this. In these cases, he took people who could least protect themselves, people from the standpoint of lower society. I hope when we leave this courtroom today that I have, to the best of my ability, provided this man shall never walk the streets of America or any other place as a free man. Sir, I have to consider you the worst offender in all respects in all these charges against you.
And with that, Robert Hansen was convicted and sentenced to 461 years plus life with no chance of parole, and was remanded to the Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary in Pennsylvania. Even after the sentencing, Robert's wife continued to find jewelry in their home that didn't belong to her, and she passed this on to the police. Although Robert had identified further grave sites on the map during his earlier confession, and most of the snow cover had melted, the ground near the Kinnick River was still frozen 8 to 10 inches down, meaning authorities would have to wait until late April, when the ground had thawed, to commence a physical search. When the time came, Robert accompanied law enforcement via helicopter to the outskirts of Anchorage, leading them to locations corresponding with the X's on his map, where he buried more of his victims. Not all locations on the map were canvassed, and remains at some locations failed to be recovered, as it was determined that some shallow graves had most likely been disturbed by bears and other wild animals scavenging for food. The two-week search from April 25th to May 9th successfully located the remains of 7 more of Robert's victims. These were Lisa Futrell, found south of the Old Kinnick Bridge; Malai Larson, found near the parking area near the Old Kinnick Bridge; Sue Luna, found east of the Kinnick River; Tamara Peterson, found 1.5 miles from the Old Kinnick Bridge; Angela Federn, found at Figure 8 Lake; and Teresa Watson, found at the Kenai Peninsula. During this search, Robert also led police to an unidentified victim found at Horseshoe Lake, who investigators dubbed Horseshoe Harriet. The victim was lying face down and dressed in a wool scarf, knitted coat and sweater, blue jeans, wool socks, leg warmers, nylon bra and tennis shoes. Cigarettes, condoms, a compact, comb, and 4 gold rings were found with the body. The victim had been stabbed and shot, and would have been 5 foot 2 inches to 5 foot 6 inches tall when she was alive. Although Robert had previously confessed to the murders of both Roxanne Easland and Andrea Altieri, their bodies have never been found, though some have speculated that the body of Horseshoe Harriet is possibly that of Andrea. Listener, you may be wondering what happened to Cindy Paulson. By the time Robert was sentenced, Cindy had returned to sex work. However, she later moved away from Alaska, married, and had 3 children. In 1988, 49-year-old Robert Hansen was returned to Alaska and incarcerated at Spring Creek Correctional Center in Seward. Contrary to his condition of not being imprisoned in Alaska, this was proof that Robert didn't always get what he asked for. Robert's wife knew nothing of her husband's double life, let alone the terror he inflicted upon the women of Anchorage over at least 12 years. She and her children continued to visit Robert in prison for a long time following sentencing, but in the end, the humiliation and whispers around Anchorage proved too much to bear, and the family relocated to Arkansas. Despite being deeply religious and doing her best as a wife to provide moral support to her husband, Robert's wife divorced him in 1990. The Pope and Young Club initially stated that Robert's crimes would not invalidate his bow hunting records. However, they later made the decision to remove his name from their records books. In November 1991, Tamara Peterson's stepfather appeared on television, expressing his anger and frustration with the APD and their investigation. Tamara's body was recovered following Robert Hansen's sentencing. The autopsy showed that she had been shot twice. However, like other victims, she could only be identified through dental records. Given the incidents that had already been reported by the time Tamara disappeared in 1982, in Robert's history of violence against women, had he been taken in prior to the early 1980s, many more lives may have been spared. The mother of another victim, Angela Federn, whose body was also identified following sentencing, was angry about Robert's plea bargain, saying of the victims,
"I don't see why he should be alive and they dead. The body of Dylan Frey was later found in August 1985 near Horseshoe Lake by a pilot. Dylan's younger half-brother, Joseph, was born only 3 years before her older sister disappeared in April 1983. Being so young, Joseph had difficulty remembering what she looked like. Dylan's father was not informed of his daughter's death prior to his own passing in the early 1990s. In June 2018, Dylan's cousin Deborah remembered her by saying, "She was never a happy child and never smiled. She had the most beautiful eyes but was always sad. Her mother never informed anyone in our family this happened to her, and I was probably closer to her than anyone in our family. This was just a horrible tragedy. My heart cries for her often. There isn't a day that I don't think about her."
The investigation and subsequent conviction of Robert Hansen prompted the Alaska State Troopers to develop specific protocols to respond to sexual assault cases. And Alaska now has a dedicated crime lab for processing forensic evidence. Sadly, in 2019, the rate of reported rape in Alaska continues to be 2.5 times the national average. In a state with a current population of only 735,000 people, Alaska consistently tops national figures when it comes to the rate of violence committed against women, with 59% of women in the state experiencing sexual violence at the hands of their intimate partner or by a stranger. There are now more safe houses around the state for survivors of violence, but the lack of access to women's shelters in rural areas continues to be an ongoing issue, and one that distinctly disadvantages Native Alaskan women and children. The Anchorage-based advocacy agency Standing Together Against Rape recently found that 30% of Alaskans were unable to access victim services due to the lack of availability of these in their local areas. Gun violence on the whole continues to be problematic in Alaska, with more guns per capita than any other state in the U.S. When it comes to recovering the potential victims of Robert Hansen, anyone with any information about the following women who are still listed as missing persons is asked to contact the following law enforcement agencies. For any information about 18-year-old Beth Van Santen, who went missing on December 22, 1971, and whose body was discovered 3 days later on Christmas Day that year, please contact the Anchorage Police Department. For any information about 17-year-old Megan Emmerich, who went missing on July 7, 1973, and 22-year-old Mary Thill, who disappeared on July 5, 1975, please contact the Seward Police Department. For any information about 24-year-old Roxanne Easland, who was last seen on July 2, 1980, and 24-year-old Andrea Altieri, who disappeared on December 2, 1981, please contact the Alaska State Troopers. In 2014, authorities exhumed the body of the previously unidentified victim, known as Horseshoe Harriet, with a renewed hope of using DNA testing and facial reconstruction to determine her identity. However, this remains unconfirmed. The body of Eklut Nayani remains unidentified, but authorities have sought assistance regarding her identity using facial reconstruction technology. Anyone with information as to her identity is asked to contact the APD. In a postscript to our story, in May 2014, Robert Hansen was moved to the Anchorage Correctional Center to receive medical attention. 3 months later, on August 21st, he died at the age of 75 at Alaska Regional Hospital in Anchorage due to undisclosed long-term health conditions, though an article at the time suggests that the cause of death was heart failure. On the day of Robert's death, State Trooper Sergeant Glenn Flothy, one of several investigators who worked tirelessly to bring Robert to justice, said, "On this day, we should only remember his many victims and all of their families."
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good.
Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.